I'm Irving Reed. I'm an old-time resident of Alaska, having come to Alaska in May 1900, and I've been a resident of Fairbanks since 1924. I'm married. I have three children, and I think 10 grandchildren. They've asked me to, the Historical Society has asked me to give an account of the muskoxen and their reintroduction into Alaska. The muskoxen are, I think I'd better go into a little geology here. Would it interest you people to do that?
Yeah.
During most of the age of mammals, the Siberia and North America were connected by a broad piece of land, or isthmus of land, and that just before the Ice Age, that collapsed so as to make the Bering Straits and the Bering Sea. During the Ice Age, so much water was taken out of the oceans to pile up this big amount of ice on the North America and Europe, that the land was bared again and made a passageway between Siberia and North America, and also left great plains north of Siberia, and also not so large plains north of Alaska. And Bering Sea was dry at one time during clear down to the Pribilof Islands, so that they were plains there, great grassy plains. The trees didn't grow on it, but it's plains. And the muskoxen were one of the inhabitants of that. There were several different kinds of species. One was took the place of the antelope. There were small running types, and there were some bigger than buffalo. Anyway, they were in Alaska up till very lately, when natives got guns and succeeded in killing them all off. The last one was killed at Point Barrow, according to Charlie Brower, in 1865. And I have records of the last herd wiped out in the Chandelier in 1897 or 1898 by two French Canadians that got down there. The old Henry Appel told me in 92 he was going up the Yukon by dog team from Circle or to the 40 mile, and he had an Indian he didn't know of told him he'd killed a bear with horns, and he'd come down originally down the Mackenzie and knew what muskoxen were, and he said it was a muskox skin, so there must have been muskoxen still here in the 1890s, but they were all cleared out. Well, as for me, I got interested in muskoxen. I was reading Macmillan's account of hunting them in Greenland and the islands up in the north, and in 1912 I went back to Berkeley to finish my education in mining. She didn't have anything to do with muskoxen. And I got interested very much because I'd been raised in Nome, where there was all the reindeer. And the natives, though there were some of them making quite a success at reindeer, there was no market for them. And I thought that muskoxen would be a much better animal, much easier herded. And I read quite a lot on them and made quite an extensive study. And in the early 1920s, I think it was about 1921, I spent a year in New York, and I was out and interviewed the famous director of the Brooklyn Zoo. I've forgotten his name. And they had two muskox bulls there. They had several, but the two had survived for many years there. And they were very interesting looking animals, though they had terrible horns on them. They had a tree growing in their pen, and they'd sharpen their horns on the tree, and they looked like needles. So I then also had corresponded, I knew Stephenson very well, and read his account of the muskoxen and his advocacy of taming them, and how good their wool was, and how very tasty. Macmillan said their meat was better than beef, and so did Stephenson. So I was very much interested, but I was too busy to do anything about it. But I was on the Alaska Game Commission, and it was a congressional party came in here under the head of a chairmanship of a man named Representative Dickinson. And we had a meeting up at the university at the, and in 1929, and I advocated them getting the muskoxen in here for the natives, domesticate, have a program of domestication and getting in for the natives. And he fell, he was from Iowa, and he fell for that. He thought that that would be a good scheme, and he went back there and advocated that. He was afterwards a senator from Iowa. But to the senator, it was old Senator Norbeck that introduced the bill. They gave him the honor of doing that, and they Congress appropriated $20,000 to get these muskoxen. They weren't the original type that they had in Alaska. The original type was the same as they got in northern Canada, but this is what they call Ward's muskoxen. It's got a little more white on it, and it's smaller than the Canadian type, but it's about the same animal. So they brought in 32 animals. They arranged with a Norwegian company to get them, and Norway at that time claimed the east side of Greenland, where the muskoxen had recently emigrated to. And they got a herd there and killed off all the old ones, which is a wasteful thing to do, and took the young ones and got 32 young ones and brought them in. There was one, I think, one yearling in that bunch, but they were all small little calves, the rest of them. And they landed here and were here for till 1936. And then there were some, the predecessors, the Federal Fish and Wildlife. It was the it was under the Department of Agriculture, and that's why these muskoxen were turned over to them for domestication. And Larry Palmer had charge of them, and Jack Warwick, who I guess a lot of you remember, was his chief assistant. And it was the Bureau of Biological Survey was the people that had the muskoxen. Well, the Bureau of Biological Survey was eliminated, and it was turned into the Federal Fish and Wildlife, and the Fish and Wildlife then didn't want anything to do with it, I suppose. They're not agricultural, they were under the Department of the Interior. So it was decided to move them down to Nunavak Island. They had increased here, but there's a big increase in bears around here, and there were some bears killed a lot of the calves, and also the farmer went out one winter and left them in charge of some fellow here. I've forgotten his name, and he allowed the older animals to feed at the same pen that the calves did, and the older animals gored the calves. So he lost the whole. So when they took them out of here, they had 32. They brought 32 in. They took 32 out. So they weren't the same ones. They were. The bears had a fight with one, and two of them had killed each other in fighting. And the bears had a fight with one, and he killed the bear. The bear killed him. So there were must have been quite a fight. Anyway, they took them down there, and they lost a couple by taking him into Nunavak Island. But the Nunavak Island, they thrived, and though they had 25,000 reindeer there, their muskoxen eat anything, and they're able to digest and get along on much less food than any other animal that Palmer had ever had any record of. So they got along all right. But during the war, there was one of the school teachers encouraged the natives to kill them, and the skins were turning up in Nome, and they carved horns. And so I went to Secretary Interior Krug, who came in here and presented this to him, and he sent a man down there and stopped the killing. So they rapidly increased after that to about 200 head. They aren't an ox at all. They're an aberrant sheep. No, not a aberrant goat. But they're nearer to the goats than anything, but they sort of stand by themselves. The real man that's done the work, though, is Teal. Teal was interested in northern development of northern resources. When he got out of college, he got a degree and a doctorate in geography, and Stephenson interested him in this, and he formed the Northern Agricultural Experiment Company or corporation or whatever it was. Anyway, he spent 5 years studying the muskoxen, and then he went up, and I guess you read the account in the Life magazine. He had the movies out about it. He went up to Canada under a permit, and muskoxen are protected up there, but he got a permit and captured them and brought down about 5 or 6 head. And he took him into Vermont, and he had a quite success in raising them. He had them there. I have a picture of him. I was up and visited him twice in Vermont, and he had muskoxen at that time. He weighed 1,200 pounds, and he got up to 1,500, but he died of virus pneumonia before they bred him, and they had some calves, but it was a shame that a tremendous animal like that was died. But then Teal wanted to come here, and he made the attempt, and he thought he was going to get a grant from the Rockefeller Foundation, but it fell through. He was so sure about it. He had the professorship of geography at the University of Vermont, and he resigned, and found that then when he resigned, he didn't get his grant. He was kind of up against it for a while, but he still kept his muskoxen going. And finally, he did get the grant here, and went down to Nunavak Island, and where there is a reservoir of them. We made a reservoir, and he has now got 23 head, and he's supposed to get 32 from there. And he's going to keep the Vermont herd going, and as a sort of insurance. And it's going to take some of those back to Vermont, some of these back to Vermont, or some of the other, and get some more from Nunavak Island, and cross the two breeds. So he's really going to town with them. Though the meat is better than, or is good, or than the finest beef, or better than most beef. Stephenson wrote me, he said he couldn't conceive of anybody killing one for the meat, because the wool is so valuable. The wool is worth, it was 4 or 5 years ago, worth $45 a pound. But probably worth more than that now. Our money has depreciated since. So it's quite a worthwhile enterprise. And Teal says, of course, he's done more experimental work than anybody else in them. And he is the man that discovered their relationship with the goats, rather than, I'd always thought the relationship was with the sheep. But he said that they were with the goats, and that he's made all kinds of tests on them. He's dehorned them, which is a tough job, because the horn spreads all over the head, and he hasn't really solved that question. But he's getting, and he says they're the most intelligent of any of the hoofed animals, and they tame very easily. And so these ones up here, they call them by the name, and they'll come right to them, and they know their stuff. Well, come in and be weighed, almost weigh themselves, and are quite intelligent. Well, that's the whole story, I guess. We just hope that this thing turns out, and this means an industry for Alaska that may be the salvation to some of these native villages. If they can get these animals and learn how to weave the wool, they did weave the wool here during when Mrs. Von Hansen was head of the extension here, and she weaved a lot of the wool. I have a scarf of that, and they made socks out of it. And if people said the socks were so warm, they couldn't hardly wear them even in the coldest weather. And this big scarf, you can just fold it up in your hand. It's a wonderful thing. And it's light as down the wool is.
Were those musk oxen turned loose down around Ely for a while?
No, that was the yaks. They're a mountain buffalo. They aren't a musk ox.
But they're the ornery ones, aren't they?
What's that?
The yaks. They're a little bit different. Their personalities are quite a bit different.
They're cattle. They aren't.
I heard they wanted to fight the train.
No, they didn't have. They were muleys. They didn't have any horns. I don't think they do much fighting.
Oh.
They've been domesticated about as long as our cattle have.
Well, they went there. I don't know when.
Point of information: in harvesting the wool, they shear them and strain.
They can't shear them, Bob. They can't shear them.
How do they get the wool?
The wool is shed in a blanket. That's the way most of the eastern wool is gotten anyway, from the goats and sheep in the Middle East.
Running against trees.
It just comes off in a blanket. You can gather it, and they sheared one in New York, and she died of pneumonia as soon as this long guard hair keeps the animal warm while the others, and you cut that, why it's they died of, they caught cold and died of pneumonia.
How did they break those tourist countries from?
Pardon?
How did they get here from Eastern Greenland?
Well, they brought them in a boat, in a little old sailboat, and it showed how tough those animals were. And then they spent about 6 weeks in New York, right in the heat, and before they brought them here, they brought them here in November. And pardon?
What year did they bring?
They brought them here in 1930.
Well, they went around to the Panama Canal then.
No, I think they shipped them right across, put them in crates and took them across by train, right across the continent. And put them in a boat and took them up. I remember them landing them here off the train. Same thing, the buffalo, they stood the trip, though, like, they're a real tough animal. They stand in front of anything.
How did they ever get them back down the Nunavak there?
They took them down by boat down the river. And put them on a barge and took them over to Nunavak and threw them overboard and let them swim ashore. Any other questions?
How long did it take about a year to tame these little young calves that they brought up? These were all young calves that came Nunavak?
From Nunavak here?
Uh-huh.
Well, they were here last... they brought them in last fall, but it took them about 8 months to tame them down. They're pretty old when they brought them here, you know. They were older than the original stock that we brought in here, pretty near as old.
Oh, I thought they were young ones.
No, they were quite old when they brought them here. He didn't get them till August, you know, and they're born in April. And he got them August or September. He got them as to drive them into the water. He drove them into the sea at Nunavak Island, but in Canada, he drove them into lakes, and then they went in a canoe and jumped over. When they scattered and jumped overboard and grabbed the young ones when they were swimming. And he did the same way out at Nunavak Island. He said, there's jumping into Bering Sea. That was really some stunt.
Not all young anymore,
either. What did they feed them?
They'll eat anything. They were still giving them milk. Besides, they ate a little hay, but he gave them milk. I think in the wild they nurse for a year till a new crop comes on. I think moose do too. I shouldn't wonder, but I never realized that before till the musk oxen came. They need that extra vitamins, a little extra booster the first year to keep going.
What's the weight of an adult?
Well, the Greenland ones, they're weighed about, the bulls weighed about, in the wild, they weighed about 900 pounds, and the females about 700. But I think the mainland ones in Canada are going another 150 pounds more. They're considerably larger.
Oh, yeah. Big animal.
Well, he doesn't look big, but he's solid.
He isn't all hair.
How many does Mr. Keel have in Vermont now?
I don't know. He had, when I was there, he had about six. But he's now conducting experiments and dehorning and all kinds of experiments with them.
Well, what's their life expectancy? About like a moose, 10, 12, 14 years?
Nobody knows. We know from the Palmer, you know, the period gestation, that nobody knew that before.
We never
Palmer.
Had any survive long enough to keep track of the age, huh? They've had them long enough now, they certainly should be.
They should know, but then nobody ever kept track of them, you see?
Oh, boy. Well, that's what you call confusing your head. They were at the age of science is with us.
Well,
they could have painted their horns different color every year, you know. Yeah.
Well, you know, there have been more misconceptions and more lies and things about the muskox than anything else. I heard some fellow wrote a long article in Beaver, the Canadian magazine, told how you could smell them for a quarter of a mile away, their musk and everything. You can put your face right down into their, right in their fur, and you can't smell a darn thing. They don't smell as much as horses and cattle. There isn't any scent to them at all. I guess I got the name because when the English came into Hudson Bay, they came into the west side of Hudson Bay, and they came in August, and the animals were rutting then.
Oh.
And pretty near any animal smelled strong at that time, and they just called them muskoxen because they smelled musky then or strong, you know. But there isn't any scent to them at all. So it's there's a big scientist back in Washington, D.C. told how terribly wild and vicious these animals were and untamable and everything else.
Well, why? Well, I heard the reason they left here was because they were so obstreperous that they couldn't control them and they couldn't rescue
them. Yeah, I walk right down among the herd, and I'll be darned if you could do that with a bunch of cattle. I walk right down into the herd of over 30 animals. And there was two of them, but I've seen sheep act that way, like human beings. They'd come right out and graze right alongside you.
Was this the present herd or the one?
That was the original herd here. Yeah.
Well, how about this classical ring that they're supposed to form to defend their...
There's no such thing.
There isn't?
There isn't, no. They tell about this ring where the big ones get in front and they... And they put the cows and the calves in the center and the bulls stand out in front, all that. That's all hooey. they'll line up, but the calves and the bulls and the cows all line up together. I've got pictures of them in Greenland lined up in so-called ring. They aren't in a ring at all. Of course, when you put dogs around them, they'll all face you. Then, but when you put a dog in a circle, some will face the other way too. That maybe that's what the idea of a ring was.
Seems to me that Freuchen wrote in that book of his on North Greenland. He and Rasmussen ran into a bunch of muskox, and they fought it up sort of like that, and they allowed themselves to be slaughtered.
Yeah, that's right. They'll all stand in a row, particularly when the dog is there. He thinks it's a wolf. But a wolf will pull down a full-grown muskox. Stephenson recorded where he saw a wolf pull down a full-grown muskox. Pull down a moose, won't he?
He's pretty good there, too.
Is the plan to put the muskox with a family, domesticate them, and then just have them in families? Or
well, that
are
would be the...
Out on the plains?
No, it would be a... The proper way to do with somebody that could, after their, this is a long range thing, you know, it'll take a couple of generations before they'll be really tame. But they, I think the way they did with the reindeer was the proper way, where they would allow somebody to take some reindeer, either by working and paying for them that way or buying them, and then for a small price, and then he returns back the number to the from his increase to the original herd. And that way they'd keep going and wouldn't deplete the original herd.
Has anything been done upon the milk? Is it edible? Is it drinkable? Is
yes. Stephenson said, Stephenson was the only way, and the only way he got a milk by shooting one and then milking it afterwards is dead. But he said it was very palatable.
How about teal?
Yeah, well, everything.
Teal hasn't tried it, that I know of.
Stephenson said that about practically everything.
I don't think he's ever tried it. No, he's been too busy doing other things.
You'll have to kick the bucket over yet, I think.
Yeah, this stuff comes in cardboard boxes, a lot handier.
Do they intend to keep a big herd on Nunavak all the time, or is there any plan?
No plan at all, so far as I can find out. They're just keeping them there because.
Is this under the control of the Fish and Wildlife?
Under the control of the Federal Fish and Wildlife, not the Fish and Game. Nunavak Island is a government reserve for the natives and for the reindeer and muskoxen.
Well, that's all the questions.
This is September the 23rd, 1965, at Fairbanks, Alaska, in the Tamno Yukon Historical Society. And in order to identify the voices on these tapes, I will ask each one to give their name when this is transcribed so they can tell who's talking to who.
Tom Iles.
Tom Miles?
Iles, yes.
Tom Iles.
Magdalene Cassidy.
Magdalene Cassidy.
Francis Baker.
Francis Baker.
Beatrice
Herning. Beatrice Herning.
Alma Matlock.
Bob Sheldon.
Bob Sheldon.
Florence Manville.
Florence Manville.
Pat West.
Pat West.
Evening, Jerry.
I thank you. This is Harry. This is Harry Hughes, operating this recorder for James Cassidy.
You never said a word.
And
you should have said it.
You didn't ask her name.
She.